tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Mila Maha, good Pat, and welcome along to the second hour of Tip Today. Now, we don't often do birthday requests on the show, but I'm delighted to do this one. I want to say hello and happy birthday to Alice O'Dwyer. And Alice is in Carrick and Shore in Parkview there. And she will be 99 on this coming Sunday. And I believe she listens to the programme every single morning. So good wishes to you, Alice, from all of your neighbours and your friends. And I believe you're a big fan of the Rose of Moon Coin. You see, if this was Trudy's show, she could sing that for you, but I won't inflict that on you. But a beautiful song it is too. How pleasant to roam by the sunny shore stream and all of that. Have a lovely day on Sunday, Alice, and thanks for being such a loyal listener to Tip Today as well. 1800 938 007. With so much information and misinformation going around in relation to COVID and vaccination and all of that, it can be rather difficult to distinguish fact from fiction. As well as that, with lockdown protests, we're seeing a rise in the radicalisation of people who are going against the party line, so to speak. Now, with most protests, or indeed more protests planned for this weekend, it's hard to know what is going to happen where this is concerned. Now, Dr. Lucy Michael is an author and a sociologist and joins me now. Good morning to you, Dr. Michael.
Good morning, nice to be with you.
And thanks for coming on with us today. Why is the current climate, I mean, not just here in Ireland, but maybe across the world as well, proving to be ripe picking when it comes to radicalisation, Doctor?
Well, it isn't a particularly, well, we could talk about COVID driving everybody at home and putting us all on the internet, and that's part of it. But actually, this is a longer trend going on over the last decade, where really the dominance of social media platforms that have done very little about hate speech, they've done very little about misinformation, and that have done very little about political advertising that's covert, you might say. Those things have led to a flood of misinformation, and it has become more and more difficult for people to understand where their information is coming from, what the problems are with misrepresentations in that, and how to tell the difference. I'm part of a group called Fingal Communities Against Racism. We set up a year and a half ago in response to a far-right candidate misrepresenting themselves in first a by-election and then a general election. And our task really was to help people to find out the information about that candidate and to make clear to everybody what their views were. And since then, we've been on a battle to address misinformation, but particularly groups that would use people's concerns about the changing natures of their neighbourhood, about COVID lockdown, about the economy, to drive, firstly, for many of those groups, it's an anti-immigration platform. Others are more concerned with other political agendas. But that misinformation has been a large part of our work as volunteers over the last year and a half, just trying to get to the bottom of what impact it's having in our communities.
And is this essentially far-right influence here?
Far-right influence is a large proportion of what you're seeing out there now. The groups that we were taking on and challenging back in late 2019, many of them have pivoted to using COVID and the idea of COVID as a hoax, attached conspiracy theories. They've pivoted because they failed to use and get elected on anti-immigration platforms. There was too much pushback by groups like ours right across the country, and so that simply hasn't worked for them. What has worked is playing on people's fears around COVID, bringing people into their networks. And once, of course, people are in those information networks, it's more difficult for them to get out, but also they become more and more convinced about the connection between things like economic recession, losing jobs, the difficulties of lockdown, mental health and so on, and the connections of that with the conversations about globalisation, migration and so on. So it's certainly a pathway for a lot of far-right groups to try and recruit into. That's not to say that everybody who's concerned about COVID or wants to go out and protest is connected with a far-right group or has far-right views.
Of course. Now, historically, of course, fascism and far-right has always thrived when they could use fear to promote their views. I mean, the greatest example, I suppose, being Germany. This is cyclical in its own way, though, is it not?
It is, and I suppose what's interesting is that not only are we able to look to history to see what happens, but actually these far-right groups right across Europe, and the Irish ones are deeply connected both with neo-Nazi groups in the United States, but particularly in Germany. They are using the same playbook from the 1930s, the 1970s, the 1980s. And because that playbook works, and one of the key groups that they will look to is people who are unemployed. Many people are either unemployed now or in fear of unemployment. And the second group is actually not those who are worst off, but who feel they have the most to lose. And that's very often shopkeepers, small business owners, entrepreneurs.
And this is what Trump played into, wasn't it? That particular cohort.
Well, for the same reasons that his strategists were very connected to those networks. And they identified for him, let's not give him the credit, let's give it to the groups that he directly went into alliance with, which were far-right groups. And they used the same strategy again and again. Take off those people who are feeling most insecure, target them, give them an easy explanation, something convincing, something that will help them to understand a complex situation where they feel that they have no control, and give them something they feel they can hook into. And that's where the conspiracy theories come in, I suppose, is, you know, they sound outlandish to many of us. But the point is that they, once people are hooked into them, they're very hard to give up, because they do give a view of the world that makes sense to them.
Of course, and a good example, I mean, for fear we might just write them off as being, you know, tinfoil hat brigade or loonies or scumbags or whatever. I mean, the result can be something like Brexit, for example.
Oh, don't write them off. Please don't write them off, because they are your sister. They are your cousins.
Yeah.
They are the guy who runs your local shop. They are your teenager's best friend. And these are people in our neighbourhood who are struggling with isolation and segregation and not knowing what's going on in the world. And they just are hooking into that because it gives them a sense of control. And they can be anybody. The worst thing that you can do is write them off. Now, there's a very big difference between writing off your cousin who's fallen for the conspiracy theories and calling out the far-right groups that are behind them. And I say, you know, that's the difference. We have to say, look, there are very organised, well-financed groups that want to take advantage of your neighbours, your cousins, your family, right? And then there are the people you know who you have a relationship. And you actually have an opportunity. If you know somebody, if you've got a relationship with them, or you can build one, you've got an opportunity to help them turn it round. You can pick up the phone, have a chat with them, talk to them about how they're feeling, give them a sense that there's more in their lives. You know, give them a sense of control back of, you know, we're all struggling a little bit, but look, there's a plan going forward. Look, it's hard. We're on lockdown one, three now. You know, lockdown one, we thought, oh, there's a plan and it looks quite good. And look, you know, it's got beautiful graphics. By lockdown two, we were quite frustrated. By lockdown three, we're just going, what is happening now?
However, Dr. Michael, I'm intrigued because I was looking down through your own credits, and you're also a member, of course, of the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission. There is that right to protest as well. So where do you, is there a sort of a narrow line there between protest and then the far right or whoever using this protest for their own uses?
Yeah, bear in mind, protest is really the 1% you're seeing of this. This is the bit that the media covers. The 99% is not what's happening on the street. It's what's happening on Facebook. It's what's happening in somebody's phone by WhatsApp. It's happening because they're on Snapchat or TikTok. You know, these the most insidious messages are not coming to us through placards and protests. That's just the bit you're seeing and the media is reporting on. The most insidious stuff is being sent to people by their own friends and family via WhatsApp. So, yeah, when we look at the protest, I mean, it is absolutely crucial that we have a right to protest. And it's absolutely crucial that we have a right to free expression. But far-right groups would have you believe that we're trying to shut down all protest, that we're trying to shut down free expression. Those rights are very carefully guarded, but they have limits on them. You cannot protest and use violence, because that falls outside of the right to protest that's protected. And you can't use incitement to hatred that's calling for genocide or calling for violence against certain groups. Because, again, our right to free expression is protected to a certain point. And that's because those rights to protest and expression they have impact on other people. So other people's rights count too. So they're not limitless rights in the same way as, your right to defend yourself is not limitless. So it is crucial that people can protest. It is crucial that we can do that even during a pandemic. But, you know, look at the way that people are responding to protests. Are people going out to protest and doing it relatively responsibly? Are they thinking about the people that they're going out and protesting with? Are they thinking about the impact of that on the communities around them? Or is it a protest that's very much about disrupting driving on the problem? Mm. And I think that's really what we saw and why so many people were horrified on Saturday in Dublin. Not only was it the violence, but it was so many people unmasked in the city centre, where people live, you know, and who were deadly afraid of the virus being passed to
of
them.
Of course, yes.
So I would say, you know, yes, our right to protest is absolutely there, and I would defend it to the hilt. We have to be cautious, and we have to be courteous when we go out to protest and ensure that our right to use that voice to call out the government when we need to doesn't impact on other people's right to life.
If we look to, once again, to history, just finally, Dr. Michael, I mean, normally with the rise of the right or the rise of fascism, it gains momentum and it reaches a pinnacle. Is that what's going to happen here? Because this is happening right across the globe with the growth of nationalism and one thing and another all over again. Is this on the build now?
I think what's really key is that in Ireland we are getting signifiers that it's time to do something about it. Up to last year, you really could say with certainty that far-right groups here were deeply disorganised. They fell out with each other all the time. They really struggled to have any kind of coherence to their message. They didn't have much funding, and they really weren't that well connected. COVID has allowed them to connect in a way that we haven't seen before. And so this is, I wouldn't say it's a tipping point, but it's certainly the markers are there that work needs to be done. So, you know, An Garda Síochána needs to be very aware that there are dangerous individuals within some of those movements, just in terms of the kind of violence we saw on the street in protest, but dangerous individuals who are using this to further their agendas. Again, that's not to diminish the absolute voice of people who are concerned about how COVID is being managed, but it is to say to people, you know, if you are concerned about somebody getting involved in one of these groups, if you have concerns yourself about messages that you're seeing, please take a step back, have a look at the information, see if there's alternative information out there, and just try to be quite conscious about who you're going out with, because we know that a lot of those groups even are taking advantage of protests that are organised by groups not involved with them. So on Saturday, we saw a whole range of different groups coming out.
Yeah.
And for example, you know, the National Party had nothing to do with the organisation of Saturday, I gather. And yet there were many of their supporters there giving out leaflets and making claims that it was their protest. The organisation of this is very deeply invested in a success. And so I think for your listeners, you know, it's really just to be aware that you will hear more and more over the coming months about the far right, about those groups. Hopefully you won't hear the key activists named, because the idea is not to give them a platform. But just to be aware that really it's not a foreign threat that's there. It is something that is about trying to change people's mind bit by bit. You may never feel that you're being recruited by the far right, but if our government starts to take those messages and use them for its own, if political parties start to take those messages, we start to move further and further right. And that's the slow creep that is a long-term danger.
Dr. Lucy Michael, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you and good morning to you. And Lucy's a sociologist and an author as well. How do you feel about that? 1800 938 007.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry. In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.